Live and local, this is a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, August 9th. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, Brenda Wright will give us a preview of this Saturday's Audubon Wild Berry Walk. Reggie Shepp will highlight upcoming Juno Jazz and Classics concerts. April Resendez, public health nurse, will tell us about this weekend's immunization clinic. And we'll get the details about the Golden North Salmon Derby. Those interviews, national native news, writer's almanac, bird note music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. And looking at weather for the rest of today, sunny, highs in the mid-70s. Tonight, mostly clear, lows around 50. It's currently 76 degrees at the Juno International Airport. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton, in for Antonia Gonzalez. A man accused of murdering a Crow Agency woman last year has been declared mentally competent to stand trial. The Billings Gazette reports a U.S. District Court judge in Billings Tuesday found 20-year-old Demarzio Suede Sanchez competent after hearing from a forensic psychologist, who said Sanchez is able to understand the court process despite some substance abuse and adjustment disorders. Sanchez is one of three people charged in the death of Roy Lynn Ride's horse, who died in June of 2016 after being beaten and set on fire on the Crow Reservation that April. Sanchez pleaded not guilty to first-degree murder. His brother, Frank James Sanchez, took a plea deal that calls for a first-degree murder charge to be dismissed at his sentencing in October. The third defendant, Angelica Jo Whiteman, is also accused of murder and will go to trial next month. Two tribes are asking a federal court to immediately shut down the Dakota Access Pipeline until more environmental review is complete, but they also laid out a backup plan in case DAPL continues to operate. The Standing Rock and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes filed a brief Monday in U.S. District Court. It's in response to Judge James E. Boasberg's ruling earlier this summer that ordered the Army Corps of Engineers to redo parts of its environmental assessment. The tribes say if Boasberg won't shut down the pipeline in the meantime, then he should at least impose alternative relief measures to protect the tribe's interests. Those fallback measures include increasing public reporting of issues like pipeline repairs and implementing a spill response plan for the Lake Oahe Reservoir. Boasberg is expected to rule in September. Meanwhile, the North Dakota Public Service Commission is preparing a case against Dakota Access LLC for alleged violations during construction of the pipeline. The Grand Forks Herald reports the regulatory agency held a closed-door meeting Tuesday regarding their complaints, but has taken no formal action yet. Oil began flowing through the Dakota Access Pipeline in June. The Cherokee Nation is aiming to eliminate hepatitis C among its tribal citizens. The tribe is presenting on its progress this week at the World Indigenous Peoples Conference on Viral Hepatitis in Anchorage, Alaska, which also coincides with the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. According to a conference press release, nearly half of the Cherokee Nation population got screened for hepatitis C, and about a quarter of those with the infection have been cured. A federal humanities advocate and a Native nonprofit are teaming up to promote Native language education programs. They'll each contribute about $2 million to fund education programs within tribal communities aimed at revitalizing Native American languages. KTOO's Tripp Krause looks at the partnership and what it might mean for Alaska.
Approximately 150 Native languages are spoken in the U.S. 20 distinct languages alone are in Alaska. Lawrence Kaplan is a linguistics professor in Fairbanks. He says Alaska Natives care enormously about their language and culture.
And the languages are very important to the groups because it's just part of their culture. It's part of what makes them unique.
The director of the Alaska Native Language Center, Kaplan, says all Native languages are endangered. That is why the National Endowment for the Humanities has teamed up with Longmont, Colorado-based First Nations Development Institute to fund Native language education. Kaplan says Tlingit and Central Yupik would be good candidates for grant funding.
To me, the languages that would benefit most would be the ones where there's an active group of people working already.
First Nations is a national nonprofit that focuses on economic development throughout Indian country. President and CEO Michael Roberts says that includes natives in Alaska and Hawaii. But competition for the language program funding could be intense.
We are going to open this really wide, nationwide, asking for folks to come in and get into a competitive process. There is an oversubscription of applicants, $2 available.
An advisory committee will be formed, and then tribes will be contacted to submit proposals. For National Native News, I'm Tripp J. Krause.
And I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Yate support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And here with me is my first guest, Brenda Wright. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you.
Brenda, you're a representative, a board member, actually, of the Juneau Audubon Society, and you're here to talk about the Wild Berry Walk that's going to take place this Saturday. I bet you wish it was happening today.
I bet I wish I did, too, because it's supposed to might be sprinkling again on Saturday.
Well, hopefully the sunshine is ripening up those berries, getting them nice and fat and juicy.
Oh, yeah, very juicy.
Tell me, Brenda, where is your secret berry picking spot?
I can't tell you that kind of thing because if I told you where the secret ones were, I'd have to kill you. But we're so lucky this year because a lot of times when you go to your favorite spot and there's no berries, you think there's no berries anywhere. But if you look around, like I did, desperately, you find where there are berries. And so that's why we would like to do this walk. We want to show people what's edible, how to find them, and how to tell the difference between things that are bad.
Oh, that's great. That sounds super interesting. Before we get into the details of the walk, let's talk a little bit about the Juneau Audubon Society. Do you know when it was established?
Yeah, it was in the mid-1970s. So we've been around for a while, and we're a small organization, but it's locally and nationally oriented. And we'd like to think that what we would like to have happen for members is to help protect and maintain wildlife, especially birds, but all wildlife for our future generations.
That's lovely. And what are the benefits to being a member? I saw you could sign up on the website.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have great free public lectures, so that's not quite the benefit. But we also do have a nice newsletter. And we have bird walks all spring for migratory birds. And then in the summer, we have our little Saturday wild walks.
Do you guys have a nice collection of the Audubon Society field guides?
You know, that's one of the things we like to give out at public market for free to help people learn how to use more, learn more about birdings. But we also have a wonderful publication that's free, and you can download it off our webpage, which is called Birds in a Digital World. And a lot of those apps are free. That's the best price ever.
An app, you say?
Yeah, many, many apps.
I did not know about that. That had not occurred to me to get an app. I had quite the obsession with the Society field guides when I was a kid, especially the beautiful drawings of the birds.
Yes.
I'm going to have to check that out. Thanks for the tip.
Oh, yeah, and it's great. It's interactive. Nowadays, they have they're beta testing where you can take your picture with your own phone or iTouch or whatever and send it in, and they'll tell you if you're right, if you correctly identified it.
What an excellent use of technology.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's really fun.
I love that. I love that idea. I'm going to check that out. Okay, but back to this Saturday's walk. What berries are ready to pick right now?
Well, we have two kinds of blueberries and cloudberries, and the last of the salmon berries, because we're going up high, there'll be a few salmon berries left. But I have had no luck at all this year trying to find the red huckleberries.
Oh.
So I scouted out this area, and I didn't find any there either. But it's a good possibility there'll be some crowberries and for sure some dogwood.
Okay. Do you pick those as well, the crowberries and the dogwood berries?
Yeah, there is an interest in types of things you can do with the crowberries. I find them somewhat insipid myself, but you can add them to other juices, and they're quite good for you, just like a lot of other berries. They have a lot of vitamin C.
Dogwood berries are also known as bunch berries.
Yes.
Correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then what other things will you be, or what other things can participants expect to see on the walk? Other plants or wildlife you hope to point out?
Oh, yes. This is a really fun time of year. Although the birds aren't singing anymore, they've all had their babies, and the babies are either begging or they don't know enough to be scared of people, so they'll come really close and dance around you so you can get a really good identification. So we'll be looking at all the plants and the birds and the shrubs and the trees. So nothing is by itself in nature. It's always surrounded by all of its neighbors.
Oh, how nice. Okay, so where will this walk take place?
Well, I was trying to make the poster and explain this a little bit better to people. It's 4.3 miles up the Fish Creek Road towards Eagle Crest, but it's not at the – there's a rock quarry there right very close to there, but it's on the left-hand side of the road going up, and it's a really large parking space where they dump gravel sometimes for road improvement, I believe. But I'll have my car parked there, and I'll have a big Juneau Audubon sign on it.
Oh, that's good. Well, you'll make yourself very visible then. Very easy to find. And what time should folks be at the meeting spot?
Well, we'll plan on meeting at 10, and then people can stay as long as you like. But if you're going to come pick berries, please wear boots. It is a little mucky, even after all this dry spell. And bring a container to put your berries in.
Of course. What's your favorite kind of container to use?
You know, there's a lot of people like to have one hanging from their neck so they can pick with both hands easily. And so it's really easy to do that with even just like a small plastic like container, like a cottage cheese container or something. Mm-hmm. Or you can just use a plastic bag or a bucket.
Yeah, I use a yogurt container myself and a shoestring. Mm-hmm. And, I do like to have it around my neck.
And Mary Lou, she's real in favor of tying it around your waist.
Oh, that's interesting, too. I'll have to try that.
Yeah, Mary Lou's been doing berry picking. She considers herself a person that has to do. She's compelled to pick berries.
I know a few folks like that myself. Well, that's fantastic. That's super interesting. And where can we find out more information about this berry walk?
You can look online at our webpage. Just Google Juneau Audubon Society. And it's also posted on our Facebook page. And there's a couple posters around, but it's 10 o'clock up Fish Creek Road Saturday morning.
This Saturday morning. All right. What else has the society got going on?
Well, you know, just coming up, we're going to have one of our more famous things. Dave Gregovich has agreed to do another mushroom walk with us. And right now we know for sure that's going to be September 9th, but we don't know where or what time yet because it depends on what the rains do with our mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. You said that one is usually pretty well attended.
Yes, people really enjoy picking wild edible mushrooms here in Juneau.
I don't know too much about it myself. I think I can only identify one, so yeah. I better go on that walk.
Yeah, it's really important to not put things in your mouth that are mushrooms that you don't know about.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, thank you very much, Brenda. I'm speaking with Brenda Wright, and she's here. She's telling me all about the Audubon Wildberry Walk this Saturday, 10 a.m. up Fish Creek Road on the way to Eagle Crest. Anything else you'd like to add, Brenda?
Oh, but thank you very much. And I hope people can come to our public meetings next winter.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. You'll have to come back and tell us more all about that.
I sure will.
And thanks again for the blueberries.
You're welcome.
This is Bird Note. Feathers are miraculous structures, especially the long, strong feathers of a bird's wings and tail that make flight itself possible. But after about a year, constant use and exposure to the elements mean they have to be replaced. So, how do you replace the roughly 20 feathers in each wing that are essential to flight without becoming earthbound? Many birds molt a few flight feathers at a time, wait until new ones grow in, molt another few, and so on. Usually the same feathers on each wing at the same time, symmetrically. So in summer, a raven that's molting might look a little ragged in the same part of each wing. For ravens, a molt can take up to 6 months. For smaller birds, closer to 2. But, crucially, they can still fly. Water birds like ducks and loons, though, are too heavy to fly with even a few feathers missing. So they molt all their flight feathers at once, becoming earthbound and especially vulnerable to predators for a month or more. During this time, they stay in or very close to the water and out of harm's way until their full suite of feathers has been completely restored. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Oh,
It is about 15 and a half minutes after the hour you're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. My next guest is Reggie Shepp, representative of Juno Jazz and Classics. Welcome back to the show, Reggie.
Thank you.
Is it May already? That was a short winter.
It's been a very short summer, for sure, but no, not quite May yet. We have some benefit concerts coming up this fall that I wanted to tell you about. Our first one is coming up on Labor Day weekend.
Oh, I've got you on the wrong mic, Reggie. I'm so sorry. Let's do that again. So I'm here with Reggie Shepp, and she says, it's not May yet. Anyway, and you said you have some benefit concerts coming up, and that's what you're here to talk about today.
I am. We have two different benefit concerts coming up this fall. The first one is on Labor Day weekend on Sunday, September 3rd. Zool Bailey's coming back, and the name of the concert is the 3 B's, Bach, Beethoven, and Bailey.
Excellent. Bach, Beethoven, and Bailey. I love it.
And Zool will be back with Will Ransom, our artistic director, and they're going to be playing an evening of Bach, Beethoven, and then Michael Doherty's inspired Tales of Hemingway, which is a cello concerto that Zool Bailey won 3 Grammys for.
We were just listening to one piece of the Doherty album. It was actually called American Gothic, so it wasn't the Hemingway piece, but I've got one of those queued up to play next as your outro, so we can get a little bit of a preview for that. I understand that for that performance, he's bringing a special friend to display to concert goers.
Yes, Zool's going to be bringing one of his Grammy trophies with him. The 3 Grammys that they won, one for him as the artist, one for the conductor, and then another one for the production manager. So everybody got to take a Grammy home. So he won't be bringing all 3, just one of them. But you get to actually hold a Grammy and have your picture taken with Zool if you like. So
wow, I've never seen a Grammy statue in real life. IRL, if you will. Have you?
No. I'm looking forward to it.
Are they made of real gold, do you think?
I don't think so, but they're really heavy. He was telling me that, you know, the ones they give you on stage are heavy, and when it came in the mail, it was just as heavy, if not heavier.
Oh, my goodness.
Because the one they give you on the stage isn't the one you get to keep.
Oh, really? It's just like the
It's just like a show Grammy. Yes.
That's funny. I wonder if the weight always takes them by surprise when they're accepting the award, or if they're just so exhilarated they don't even notice.
I would think he seemed to be walking on air as he got up on stage to get it. I streamed it and was watching it.
So the Grammys is probably floating in his hand. Okay, that's excellent. So that all sounds fantastic. Looking forward to that. And has he performed any of these pieces before?
No, the pieces that they're going to be playing are the Bach Sonata in G minor for cello and piano, Beethoven Sonata number 1 in F for piano and cello, and then the cello concerto Tales of Hemingway, which is just a wonderful contemporary piece of music. So we're going to have a couple of the classic masters and then a brand new contemporary piece, and none of them have been played here in Juno before.
Oh, that's so exciting. All right, so that's the one that's coming up on Labor Day.
On Labor Day at the Jack, 7 o'clock at night. Tickets are currently on sale at our normal locations, the Jack Box Office, Hearthside Books, and of course online at jazzandclassics.org.
Thank you very much for delineating the normal locations. Not everybody knows, especially newcomers. So, all right. And then you also said that you wanted to talk about the Postmodern Jukebox.
Postmodern Jukebox is coming to Juno. People have been begging us for years to get them up here. We've never been able to get the schedules to jive to get them here. And we are bringing them up on Sunday, October 22nd at Centennial Hall. Tickets go on sale tomorrow morning to the public. Tomorrow morning, they'll be available online at Jazz and Classics and at the Jack Box Office. They won't be available at Hearthside's till August 15th, but they'll be there soon.
Very soon.
Okay. Very, very soon.
People must be chomping at the bit. I bet they're just going to wait by their computers all night until the sale's open.
If you do not know about Postmodern Jukebox, they take contemporary songs of today and restylize them into different eras, whether it be swing, jazz, bebop. They just changed the popular songs you know today and give them a totally different feel and sound. And they travel with about 10 different musicians, dancers. It is a full production show.
Wow. And they've never been here before.
And they've never come to Juneau before. Like I said, people have been asking us to bring them. So they're coming October 22nd, 7 o'clock, Centennial Hall. Tickets go on sale. I do expect them to go very quickly and for us to be sold out before that night. So I wouldn't wait too long to get your tickets. We've got about 2 months here for tickets to be on sale.
Excellent. Well, good job, Jazz and Classics, for bringing them up.
Oh, we are so excited to be able to do that. What a wonderful thing. And both these concerts are benefits for the festival to help us bring up our artists that we bring up in May so we can keep the ticket prices low for all of our May concerts and do our wonderful education and outreach programs that we do to all the schools, senior centers, other places around town. As people know, the state office building, we do so many free concerts that this allows us to do that.
Well, thank you for all that you do for the community and all that Juneau Jazz and Classics does as well. I don't think you'll have any trouble getting folks to come out to either of these benefit concerts.
I don't think so. I mean, they're going to be great concerts. Wonderful music in Juneau.
Oh, yeah. Live music, too.
Yes.
Which is very exciting. Always a treat. All right. So what else would you like to mention today?
Just for people to save the dates for some stuff that's coming up in the future. We're going to do Swing in the New Year again, of course, on December 31st, New Year's Eve. And so to mark your calendars for that, as well as we're going to have another concert, classical concert, called Martinis and Mozart. Will Ransom is coming back up with Julie Coucheron. For those who went to the event and saw their four-handed piano pieces, it's phenomenal. And they're coming back up and they're going to play a couple of Mozart symphonies on the piano for four-handed piano. And that's going to be on January 14th.
Well, Julie was on the show back in May, and she was lovely.
She's fabulous, and she was wonderful to look at. She's got a great personality, and she plays the piano like an angel. It's amazing. So
I'm glad she liked it here and wants to come back.
And then the festival next year is going to be May 4th through the 19th. And I can give you a hint of a couple of people are coming for our opening weekend. Our blues band this year is Andrew Junior Boy Band. You can look them up on the web. He's fabulous out there. I have actually gone to his Facebook page and linked it and getting different little tidbits all the time of his music. And I'm so excited he's coming to be our blues artist. And then we're going to have the Eroica Trio, which is a cellist, violinist and pianist who are award-winning all around the world musicians. So we're very excited to have them coming. And they'll be doing a classical cruise as well as Strings at the Shrine.
Wow, that all sounds so exciting.
First weekend's already set and done. So we've got the blues dance, which is going to be a real dance, open dance floor, the blues cruise with Andrew Jr. Boy Jones, and then the Eroica Trio coming to do the classical cruise. Haven't had a classical cruise in a while, and Strings at the Shrine.
I don't know how I'm going to be able to wait. It seems like such a long way off.
Well, there's one more thing coming that's really exciting. Arlo Guthrie's coming back to Juneau.
Really?
Really. He's coming on June 29th, 2017. So mark your calendars now to save that date because Arlo's coming back with the Generation Tour.
Reggie, you just dropped a bomb on a Juneau afternoon. Breaking news. That's so exciting. Well, I won't miss that for sure.
So, yeah, I know it's the middle of summer for some people, so you want to mark your calendars now so you can plan your vacation around being in Juneau.
All right. So tell me that one more time. When is that?
That's June 29th, 2018. We'll be at Centennial Hall. I'm sure we'll pack the place again.
I'm sure you will. Excellent. Well, thanks for being here, Reggie. Thanks for all that exciting music news. Anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up today?
That is it. Thank you for having me so much. I so appreciate it.
Anytime, anytime. All right, we're going to go out on The Sun Also Rises. That's from the Michael Doherty album that Zuel Bailey will be performing some pieces from. All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a little bit of the Michael Dougherty piece that Zuba Bailey plays on and will be performing at the Labor Day concert coming up September 3rd. Next up, we've got Writer's Almanac. And then we'll be right back to talk with April from the Public Health Center.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 9th of August, 2017. It was on this day, 1974, Richard Nixon officially resigned from the presidency, 11:35 in the morning, and Gerald Ford took the oath of office. It's the birthday of the woman who created Mary Poppins, Pamela Lyndon Travers, P.L. Travers, born Queensland, Australia, 1899, created the British nanny who appears at a household in a high wind and floats away when the wind changes. It's the birthday of Isaac Walton, Stafford, England, 1593, famous in his time as the biographer of George Herbert and John Donne and many others, and also author of a book which has remained in print for more than 350 years, The Complete Angler, or The Contemplative Man's Recreation, all about fishing, tips for fishing, anecdotes and instructions and poems and commentary about what makes fishing so special. And it's the birthday of the poet Philip Larkin, born Coventry, England, 1922. Father was a city treasurer, Nazi enthusiast, mother an anxious woman. Boy grew up with poor eyesight and a stammer, and he sought refuge in books, went off to Oxford, studied literature, wanted to write fiction, came out with his first collection of poetry not until 1945, called The North Ship, wrote two novels after that, spent more than 30 years as a librarian at the University of Hull, private man, rode a bike to work 5 days a week, published only 4 short volumes of poetry in his lifetime, fewer than 100 pages, never married, lived alone, was known as a curmudgeonly glum person, never gave readings of his poems, and yet he became one of the most popular poets in Great Britain. Philip Larkin said, "I think writing about unhappiness is probably the source of my popularity, if I have any. After all, most people are unhappy, don't you think? Deprivation is for me what daffodils were for Wordsworth." Here's a poem for today by Paul Hostovsky, The Calculus. My hygienist likes to include me in the decision-making. Shall we use the hand scaler or the ultrasonic today? She asks me. I like the way she says we, like we're doing something intimate and collaborative, like building a snowman or more like dismantling one after an ice storm, flake by frozen flake. The calculus is caused by precipitation of minerals from your saliva, she explains. You can't remove it with your toothbrush. Only a professional can do that. She's very professional. She doesn't dumb it down. Pay more attention to the lingual side of your mandibular anterior, she says. I love it when she talks like that. I love the names of teeth, incisor, third molar, bicuspid, eye tooth. Her own teeth are virtuosic. Calculus comes from the Greek for stone, she says. In mathematics, it's counting with stones. In medicine, it's the mineral buildup in the body, kidney stones, tartar on teeth. She teaches me all this as I sit there with my mouth open, looking astonished. The Calculus, a poem by Paul Hostofsky from Is That What That Is, published by Future Cycle Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
In 1989, the Exxon Valdez spilled 11 million gallons of crude oil into Prince William Sound. What you might not know, people saw this coming. Before the pipeline was even built, fishermen like Ross Mullins fought to keep oil tankers out of the Sound.
We got to do something. He says this could be a disaster for Prince William Sound.
On the next Midnight Oil, when the one thing fishermen worried would happen, happened.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is my good friend and former coworker and fantasy football teammate, April Resendez, public health nurse. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Important question. Are you ready for football season?
I am.
April's a Patriots fan. I'm just going to out her. And I am not. All right. Well, it's good to see you, April. We did used to work together before I started here. Here's a more important question. Are you ready for back-to-school season?
We are very ready for back-to-school at Public Health.
Tell me a little bit about what you guys do to get ready for all the kiddos coming in.
So before any kids can start back-to-school, they need to be up to date on their immunizations. So to help facilitate this before school starts next week, we do have an immunization clinic this Saturday from 10 o'clock until 2 o'clock. We are taking appointments, but you're also welcome to just walk in.
Is that at the health center?
It is at the health center.
And where is the health center, for those who don't know?
We are on Glacier Highway, right across from Twin Lakes. So
excellent.
Right after you turn, go past where you turn up for the hospital, and we'll be on the right. We have a blue and white sign out front.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to find. And it's on the bus line.
Yes, bus stop right at the end of the driveway.
Excellent. Yes, I've been there many times. So apart from getting immunizations, what else can folks do to help stop the spread of cold or flu amongst kids or themselves?
So, yeah, with back to school, it comes back to being in group settings and kids coming home from sick. So hand washing is really best bet. Really encouraging kids, make sure they're washing their hands after playing outside, after using the bathroom, playing with animals. And then if your kid is sick, keeping them home as well.
So that's okay to keep them home from school.
Mm-hmm.
Better to do that than spread the germs.
Yes.
And, okay, so for those who don't know, what other services does public health nursing offer at the Public Health Center apart from immunizations?
Yeah, so immunizations, big one, especially for kids. We also offer TB testing if you need it for work, housing, treatment. We offer birth control, reproductive health services, STD testing. And all our services are all for ages 29 and under. But if you're not sure or not sure where to go, we're also happy to always talk with people and make sure we can get them connected to what they need.
Excellent. So what's the phone number for the health center?
Our phone number is 465-3353, and we have someone there from 8 to 5 on Tuesday through Friday and 8 to 6 on Mondays. And we do, during the week, we do everything by appointments, but we are pretty flexible and we'll work with you to get you in when you need to be seen. But like I said, this Saturday clinic, you can make an appointment, but you're also welcome to show up. We're going to have 3 nurses there with more kind of as backup if it's really popular. But we do ask that if you come on Saturday, try not to show up right at 2 o'clock, but also bring your immunization records, bring that piece of paper the school nurse might have sent home with you at registration, or any records you have showing what your kids have already had so that we can figure out what they might need to go back to school.
That's really good advice. So I've been to your flu shot clinics, and it's kind of like a party atmosphere. You guys have snacks and giveaways and stuff like that. Will there be any of that at the immunization clinic?
So we're setting this up more like a regular clinic with the private exam rooms and kind of taking a little bit longer, talking with people, making sure that they know what they're getting and what they need. But we always have stickers and books and toothbrushes for the kids to make it seem a little more appealing to come in and see us.
That's good. And yeah, the privacy makes much more sense. Well, I know you have a website because I worked on it quite a bit when I used to work for public health. Is that still publichealthnursing.alaska.gov?
Yes. And I'm glad you said it because I can never remember it.
It's, yeah, or you can Google it. And I know you can find a lot of information there about the Juneau Public Health Center as an individual location and locations and services and contact numbers for health centers statewide. Is that a good place to go for finding out more about this weekend's event?
I believe there will be some information up there. We also have a Facebook page that has the flyer posted on it, just Juneau Public Health. And then on the website as well are the forms that need to be filled out ahead of time for immunization appointments. It's just a registration form. And if we've seen you before, it's even simpler. It's just an update when you come in.
Oh, that's great. So you can get the form online. Mm-hmm. I forget if you can fill it out online or if you have to download it.
I think you can fill it out and print it out, or just print it out and fill it out with pen, bring it in with you, and that expedites the process a little bit.
Excellent. Well, that makes it even easier. Thank you for having that clinic, and thanks to all the public health nurses for working it. Will there be a flu shot clinic this year?
We are working on having another one of our big flu clinic events sometime in November, hopefully downtown again, and probably in another month or so we'll start getting the word out about that.
Great. Anything else you'd like to mention?
I was just going to mention quickly, so what kids might be due for, kindergartners are going to need all their 4 to 5-year-old shots updated to go to school. And then the next big age range is going to be 11 to 12 or going into high school. And in addition to the required school vaccines, the tetanus and measles and chickenpox, we really encourage people with teens to think about the HPV and meningitis vaccines. They're not required for school, but they're really important to protect your kids' health as well.
Excellent. Cool. Anything else?
Well, we're happy to see kids. If they have a private provider, that's a great place to get your updates as well. Talk with your doctor and see about getting in there if you've got one.
Awesome. Well, thank you, April, for coming in today. And thanks for all you guys do, offering all these public health services to the community and being the safety net. We really need you guys.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Here's a little Florence and the Machine for Nurse April.
Yeah. This is Lieutenant Chris Sell from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17YOK, all sorts of groups have adopted specific weeks during which they are doing something special to help spread kindness. This week's group is the Juno Order of Eastern Star. You can send stories and pictures of your own kindness experiences to 17YOK at junopolice.com. Be sure to follow the Juno Police Department's Facebook page. Together, we can make Juno a better place to live.
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 16 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me are my next guest, Kathy Munoz and Doug Larson, here to talk about the Golden North Salmon Derby. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So my first question is, where is your secret salmon fishing spot?
Well, I'm afraid that those secret salmon fishing spots might have gone away as a result of not having kings. So wherever people are catching cohos, and I think most people know where those places are, that's where they want to be.
And if they don't know, you're not telling, huh? All right, so the Derby kicks off this weekend. Tell the good people all about it.
Sure. The event starts Friday at 7:30 a.m. is the kickoff time, and it runs all weekend long, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the final event will end at 6 p.m. on Sunday.
Fantastic. I understand this is the 71st annual Golden North Salmon Derby. Were either of you around for the first one?
Not I.
Just
I won't
kidding.
Speak for Kathy.
Just kidding. I know you guys are way too young for that. But what are your roles in the Derby? You said you're co-chairs of the Derby. What does that entail?
So that's right. Kathy and I agreed to step up and co-chair the Derby. That really means that you oversee all of the parts of the Derby, and there are many. There's prizes to get. There are halls to line up for facilities, and there's ice to get, and there's a fish buyer, and there's permits to get, and a number of things. So the co-chairs really ensure that those things get done. And then on top of that, we have a coordinator who helps coordinate all the details associated with the Derby. And again, there are many of them.
Mm-hmm. And many volunteers, too. We begin planning and meeting in February, and we have a core group of about 8 to 10 really active volunteers that help make the Derby possible, as well as lots of community support. We couldn't do this Derby without the support of the business community. And this year we have up to $200,000 in possible prizes. So it's just incredible to us, the generosity of the business community.
Excellent. Well, that's a good segue to my next question, which is, what are the prizes for the winners this year?
So the first place prize winner gets a large amount of cash, $10,000 in cash. They get a limo ride to and from the Derby award ceremony, which
nice.
I need to make a real note here that the award ceremony this year is going to be at the Elizabeth Paratrovich Center in the A&B Hall. So people that are used to going to Centennial Hall, that's not the case this year. So we want people to be aware to come to the right place. So the first place will also get a trophy, and they get a jacket, and they get a belt buckle to go with that to commemorate their award. And, you know, this year, of course, it's going to be a coho derby. And so how big the biggest coho will be, we'll find out. Last year, the largest coho that was turned in and got in the prizes was 19 pounds, 5 ounces. So we'll see if somebody can meet or beat that for the big one this year.
Yeah, that was the big fishing news this week, the prohibition on king salmon retention. That was issued on Monday. How do you expect that to affect the Derby?
Well, we ran some numbers just to see out of curiosity what that might mean. And looking at last year's data, what we saw was that last year we had 85 kings that actually were turned in, weighed, or turned in a scholarship fish, and that amounted to about $5,400 in income from sales. That's about 23% of the total. Cohos, we had about 1,650 cohos, and those brought in about $18,500. So that was about 77% of the income. So clearly,
I see.
We've had a coho derby this year, you know, primarily a coho derby. Of course, the kings add a little excitement and interest, but in terms of revenue, with the forecast that's out there about coho numbers being up, we're hoping that difference between what we had with kings and now cohos coming into the mix, we're hoping we can make up that difference and actually do well for the scholarships.
Anything you'd like to add?
Sure. I'd just add that since the Derby began in 1953, we have awarded territorial sportsmen through this event has awarded close to $2 million in scholarships to 300 Juno students. So these are sizable scholarships, and they're spread out over the course of study, whether it's a two-year course or a four-year course. The scholarships are $12,000, and they're very generous and very helpful to the students. So, again, we're hoping for a lot of community support. It's a great event for a great cause, and there's lots of opportunity, like Doug said, to bring in the silver salmon.
Well, and I'd also add that nothing's changed in terms of prizes. There's 71 prizes for the top fish. There's still a high five for up to $50,000 from the mining companies. There's a $44,000 high five from Bullwinkle's Pizza. So there's some real great prizes. So whether you bring in a coho or a king, it really doesn't matter in that sense. It's going to be the biggest coho that's going to win the Derby, and somebody's going to walk away with several people are going to walk away with really substantial prizes.
You have any predictions for coho size this year?
Well, a friend of mine was out and doing pretty well, and he said he had one that he figured went about 17 pounds. So that's a good sign. 17-pound mm-hmm. coho is a nice fish. Mm-hmm. So if we can get some fish in the 17, 18, 19 pounds, that'd be awesome.
That'd be great. Yeah. Wonderful. And as I said earlier, the business community has stepped up in a big way. We have close to up to $200,000 in prizes. Everything from the first prize, which Doug talked about, which includes the $10,000 cash prize, as well as a number of wonderful prizes included in that package. But we have many opportunities, lots of great prizes in the top 71 categories, so it's pretty exciting. I mean, as Doug said, even though we're not going to have a King Salmon Derby this year, we're going to have a Silver Salmon Derby, and it should be very successful.
Is this the first time it hasn't been a King Salmon Derby?
It is, yes. You may recall that last spring, in response to concerns about local stocks of King Salmon, the Taku River and the Chilcat up by Haines especially, the Department of Fish and Game closed all King Salmon retention and even fishing for them back in the spring. Mm-hmm. That affected the Tlingit-Haida Derby at the time. And they had no recourse but to cancel the Derby because, unlike this fall Derby, they had no cohos to fall back on. We're really fortunate in the sense that, yes, we won't be able to harvest kings, but we've got cohos. And cohos, like we've said, make up the bulk of the Derby anyway. And so having a coho Derby is not a bad thing. And actually, I'm pretty excited to see what happens as a result of this new playing field. Mm-hmm. It's true that there are some people in this community who are very, very good at fishing king salmon. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of others, like myself, who aren't so good at it. And so for people that aren't as good at getting king salmon, this really levels the playing field. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to some of my friends that are really good king salmon fishers, and they go, you know what? That's okay. So I hope others feel the same way. And everybody gets out there and sort of levels the playing field, and we'll see what comes out of that.
Well, what does it take to be good at king salmon fishing versus coho salmon fishing?
Well, I think there's king salmon are just a little more evasive, and they don't school like cohos do. So you get into schools of cohos, you can get into quite a feeding frenzy and do pretty well. Kings are more secretive and elusive, and they're in deeper waters. But where exactly? And that's why when you asked the question earlier, where's that secret spot? King salmon fishers are pretty private about their secret spot. Cohos, on the other hand, it's kind of like going out and looking for whales. You look where the whale watcher boats are, and that's where the whales are. Well, with coho fishing, you go and look where the people are dragging lines for cohos, and that's pretty much the spot. So there's not a whole lot of secrets when it comes to coho fishing.
That's right. All right. So what do folks need to participate? Can you sign up for the Derby even if you're fishing from the shore?
So the tickets are available now, and they're $40 for adults and $10 for young people ages 6 to 12. They're available in six different locations. May I say the locations?
Yes, you may. Please do.
Western Auto, Sportsman Warehouse, Harry Plumbing and Heating, Juno Mercantile and Armory, Foodland IGA, and also the DeHart store out at Auk Bay.
Excellent.
And in response to your question about fishing from shore, one of the Derby rules is that you cannot fish from shore. You must fish from a vessel.
Well, that counts me out, I guess.
Oh, and you just need to find a friend with a vessel.
You're absolutely right. I'll do that right after the show.
Even if you don't fish, you can participate in one of the competitions by buying a ticket. You get your name is put into a pot for consideration of the high five, which is up to $44,000 in prize money.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I mean, it behooves you to buy a ticket even if you can't get out on the water.
That's a wonderful idea. I like the idea of winning by luck. Well, that's all super interesting. Thank you for the information. I did want to ask, what is the biggest salmon on record for the Derby?
Well, in 1971, Dr. Gary Hedges brought in a 59-pound, 8-ounce king, and that is the biggest one on record. And he'll remind you of that if anybody forgets. He likes to remind that. In fact, his email address is the world's greatest fisher, or the acronym for that. So he's earned it by getting the biggest fish, and that was again in 1971.
Wow! And are either of you are you guys past participants in the Derby? Have you participated?
Yes, we both have, and Doug is a former recipient of one of the scholarships.
Really?
Before he went to school, he was able to take advantage of that, and it was very helpful.
It was very helpful, yeah, and that's why. Frankly, you know, people go, why are you co-chairing the Derby and what's your association? I said, you know, when you're given something, it just makes sense to give back. And so both Kathy and I, and we've gotten a lot from the Derby, from TSI, and from the community. And so this is our way of saying thank you and doing something to help out.
Oh, and I have a little bit of time here, and I remembered something else I wanted to ask. Now, this may be a silly question because I've never entered the Derby before, but what happens to the fish?
The fish is sold to Glacier Seafoods. Alaska Glacier Seafoods is the buyer, and the money that we generate through the sale of the fish goes into the scholarship fund and helps fund the scholarships.
So that's where the scholarship money comes from.
Right. And last year, I believe we were about $24,000, Doug, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
In revenue.
In fish sales, mm-hmm. Yep. And then, of course, you have the ticket sales on top of that. And that's actually a good segue to give a shout-out to Mike Erickson at Alaska Glacier Seafoods. He's bought the fish for several years, gives us top dollar. He provides ice, no charge, for all the sites, and that's something that we really want to get out as well, as fishers should go and get ice. There will be available in all locations, so you can pick up ice to put your fish in when you catch them to keep them nice and firm so that when you sell them, we can, in fact, get top dollar for those fish.
That's fantastic.
That's really a critical point because the icing creates a higher quality product and a higher dollar return to the event. So, yes, please get your ice ahead of time when you head out on the water.
We've got Sean Hooten working as our ice chair this year, and he's going to ensure, together with the Alaska Glacier Seafoods and CBJ, that we have plenty of ice available, so please use it.
I can't help but picture him sitting on a giant chair of ice. When you say ice chair. Well, that's great. Well, thanks so much to all the businesses that are participating, everyone you mentioned, and all the locations selling tickets,
and to you too. Thank you.
Yeah, we're speaking with Kathy Munoz and Doug Larson, all about the Golden North Salmon Derby that starts this Friday, 7:30 a.m. and closes on Sunday at 6 p.m. And the award ceremony, tell us again when that is.
That's Thursday evening, August 17th at 7 p.m. at the
Elizabeth Pratrovich Center.
Thank you, Kathy.
Anything else either of you two would like to add?
We just really appreciate being on and talking about the event and look forward to a great weekend. Thank you very much.
I think it's going to be lovely.
Thank you.
Yes.
Gather around me, people. Let me tell you all a story of a love that's crumbled into lust. A West Virginia country boy, well, he fell for a Texas filly, and she stomped his proud dart in the dust. Now he's a rodeo geek. He's just a rodeo geek. Now he's a rodeo geek. His pleasures were simple. He had no fancy crutch. Mountain women adored him just for his gentle touch. But then one day she caught him at the bar sipping suds. He was decked out in her flashy cowgirl buds. Now he's a rodeo geek. He's just a rodeo geek. Now he's a rodeo geek. Oh, pick it.
wrapped up that interview with a little bit of leftover salmon outro in honor of the Golden North Salmon Derby. Thanks for tuning in today. Our guests were Brenda Wright, Juno Audubon Society, Reggie Shupp from Juno Jazz and Classics, April Resendez, public health nurse for the immunization clinic this Saturday, and Doug Larson and Kathy Munoz talking about the Salmon Derby that starts this weekend. And we featured music by Zool Bailey and Florence and the Machines, as well as Leftover Salmon, and this is another track that Zool Bailey is playing on. That concert's coming up on Labor Day weekend. Don't miss out. In tomorrow's show, Lori Scanling will host. We'll talk with landscaper Dave Lindrum about applying his art at UAS. We'll also talk with Denise Guizio and Sergey Niehaus about some changes at Capital Transit. That's tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon.